Up is Down, Left is Right is sponsored by Republic of Texas Insurance, specializing in affordable medical insurance packages for both individual performance artists and group policies for theater companies. Republic of Texas Insurance can handle all your life, health, and general liability insurance needs. Check them out at www.republoftxinsurance.com/arts. Hello and welcome to Up is Down, Left is Right, a Theater Jones podcast. I am your co-host, Brian Wilson, with my tag team partner, Mona Lisa Amador. Hey, Mona Lisa.
Hello, everyone. Hi.
Today we have some guests from Undermain Theater's Madame Bovary, playing now through March 15th. We have Danielle. Oh, see, I should have done this before we started. Help me pronounce your last name, Danielle.
Giorgio.
Giorgio. That's really easy, but every time I read it, I say it a different way. I'm keeping all of this in, by the way.
I hope so. It's got Danielle, a lot of vowels in
Giorgio.
There. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I think, is that Greek?
It is Greek, yes.
Okay. If I think about it like Italian, it comes out easier for me. So, Efradisto, Danielle, for joining us. That's in Greek for our listeners.
It is. Wow.
Thank you for joining us. And we have Stephanie Cleghorn Lasso, who is starring as the title character Emma Bovary and is a company member at Undermain. Stephanie, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. And it's Hasso.
Hasso. See, Hasso. You look at that and you go, that one's going to be the easy one.
No, you don't have to keep all this in, but yeah, Stephanie Cleghorn Hasso.
Yeah, this is what you get for having a generic gringo kind of being the host of the show. It's like, I can pronounce Smith and Jones really well, but as soon as we get outside of that, we are no longer in my wheelhouse. Anyway, thank you guys for joining us. We're here to talk about Madame Bovary. I'm very excited about this play. I've studied this novel a decent amount and am fascinated by it as novel. Stephanie, question for you to start is, tell us about how you got into the head of Emma Bovary.
Oh, well, I did read Flaubert's Madame Bovary, and I think that was my first step, is truly understanding perhaps Miss Kennedy's inspiration for this beautiful character. So it started there, and I had a lot of conversations with others who have read Madame Bovary or been influenced by Emma Bovary, but I connected with her almost immediately. I related to her being this flawed human. I related to her just wanting to love and be loved. I related to her imperfections. So I think that was the first step, is just really connecting with her in the mind of Flaubert, and then connecting with the script and having many, many conversations with Danielle and Bruce. They have been incredible.
So Danielle, can you tell us your first impressions when you read Kennedy's adaptation, her version of it?
Yeah, so the first time that I read the script that we're using for Madame Bovary, I was blown away by the fact that Audrey and Kennedy could get this massive, massive novel down to 62 pages of a script and 95 minutes on stage. Because when you listen, if you listen to like the Audible or the book on tape version of Madame Bovary, it's like 12 hours long. So somehow she got 12 hours into 95 minutes. So it's just like really incredible to see what stood out to her as a playwright and as a woman, mm-hmm. and what story she wanted to tell, what concept, what point, what version of Flaubert's imagination she wanted us to connect to. And I was really interested in that because I actually had to translate this novel when I was in college. I was a French major. And I had to spend like my junior year translating Bovary. And so I'm always curious what other people get from the novel and what ends up being important to them. Mm-hmm. So I found her take on who Emma is and how she feels and her relationship to her daughter and her daughter's relationship back to her mother. And how in the novel, we don't really get to see so much of the consequence of actions and how those affect the other people in Emma's life. But in this version, in this adaptation, we really can see everyone's inner thoughts and how those end up destroying Emma and how they all end up destroying each other.
That's interesting because, you know, in the book, there doesn't seem to be a lot of internal monologue.
There isn't. And,
yeah. And there's, you know, we get the kind of narrator's analysis a little bit, but they're not necessarily in the heads of the characters. Mm-hmm. Well, before we get to internal monologue, since you mentioned that the audiobook is like over 12 hours and you've both spent time with the novel. And this is a terrible question, but it's one that I really want to know, which is what got put on the cutting room floor that you guys are upset about? Because I'm going to be every time I go see something that's like a dramatization of a great work of literature, or even like Shakespeare, when I go to Shakespeare Dallas and they cut something and I'm like, how dare they cut this? It's so important, but it's only important to me. Nobody else cares. What was something that was kind of left out as far as the dramatization versus the novel that you guys were kind of either rooting for or upset that it got cut?
So spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Well, for me, it was more of how condensed it was. So I don't know if there's a particular scene, but I just think that everything is so condensed as it has to be if you're only telling it, you know, 60 some pages. And that was a real challenge for me to how do I capture this passionate love affair in, you know, 2 minutes or less, and then be heartbroken on the next page when my lover is telling me he's leaving. So I think that was the challenge for me, is everything was so condensed and so quick that I had to really capture Emma's, all the emotions she was experiencing in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with Stephanie, because there's a lot of leaps that you have to take inside of this script for Emma particularly, that, you know, if there was an opportunity for more exposition, like you might see it, really get to dive inside of her brain. But I think what's super exciting is that we're kind of living this moment with her, which you sometimes don't get in a massive epic novel, because you're walking step by step through this pastoral landscape. But in this play, we're like living on the edge with Emma. We're making those discoveries with Emma. And that's exciting. But for me, I would have liked to have seen maybe a little bit more of Charles's story, because when I read Bovary and have studied it, you know, it's this case study on real human nature and how flawed we all are. And Charles Bovary is an extremely flawed man. And I wish that there was just a little more of that.
Do we get Hippolyte's operation that happens midway through?
Oh, I can't tell you.
See the show.
I'm gonna see it on Friday. I wanna emotionally prepare myself, because I
manage,
feel like,
your expectations.
I feel like that's such a critical scene for the work as a whole. But anyway, I'm sure it'll work as a play regardless. I'm sure that'll work.
So Stephanie, in tackling Emma's flaws, how do you present her as whole and still likable?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think that it was, for me, it seemed, for me, it was rather easy, because I fell in love with her so quickly. And I was able to see past her flaws. And like I said, you know, earlier, I just felt like really deeply connected to her. And I think that she is a very selfish human. And I don't know if she's aware of the consequences in the moment when she's making her decisions, but she hurts a lot of people and she brings a lot of pain, and I recognize that. But I think I'm so forgiving of her because I saw what she wanted. She just wanted to be loved so deeply, and she had so much to give. And I think she had all these men and humans in her life that were ignoring that and not valuing her for who she really was and what she had to offer. So I think that I just had so much love for her that it was easy for me to be forgiving of her. And when I talked to others about their impression of Emma, there was a lot of females, a lot of women that said, you know, she's a powerful woman. She's a powerful woman. She's a strong woman. And I spoke to one human and she told me, you know, when I was growing up, when I first read Madame Bovary, she was my role model. And now I realized she can't be. And to me, it's like, she's still my role model. Even though she makes these tragic mistakes, she was this powerful, strong woman that from the beginning of her life to her end, there's a spoiler alert, that she was going to take charge, and she was not going to let anyone control her, and she was going to love and live to her fullest.
That's something that's very interesting to me about looking at literary characters or even pop culture characters, is that the tragic hero as male can be a hero, but the tragic heroine doesn't always get the heroine much as much as just the tragic or the flawed. So Danielle, I'm wondering what your thoughts are in kind of helping craft this story for the stage. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at a character like Hamlet, who is a tragic hero to a degree, or even a Tony Soprano, who is the mm-hmm. main character mm-hmm. and terrifically flawed, what is it mm-hmm. about the difference in sex that you think maybe provides a much different view for the audience and a much different reaction?
Well, I would actually say what Flaubert did with Madame Bovary and with Emma Bovary is kind of erase gender, because what he did so brilliantly with Emma is show how human she is. And it doesn't matter that if it was a man going through this or a woman going through this, we all go through this. Emma's journey is everybody's journey. And this is something that, like, Stephanie and I had talked about, and I wrote an essay for Undermain actually, on the fact that Emma Bovary is me. She's you. She's all of us. We all embody the desires and the passions and the wants to just live life, to experience things. And that's what Emma wanted. She was trapped, as we all can get trapped in our everyday lives and the minutiae of just existing. And we all wonder what's on the other side. Is the grass greener? What if I had made another choice? What if I had chosen somebody else? What if I had chosen this other completely different path in my life? What would I do now? Who would I be? And we do see that with male heroes. We see them go on these great epic journeys and fight these monsters and fall in love with all these women, and we never once condemn them. But when you place it in a female story, we're immediately so willing to condemn them for what they've done. But what we get with Bovary is not a condemnation, it's just facts. Here we are, living life, making choices. Those choices have consequences, but honestly, they're all going to end up the same, no matter what gender you are or who you are. And that's what I think is what's so brilliant about the novel, is that it gives us that strong female character, that strong female lead that we all want, a heroine, but a heroine that looks honestly just like us. She's not a princess in some tower that needs saving. She's going to save herself. And whatever happens at the end of the novel and the end of the play, which I don't want to give away, but I mean, if you've read it or like have the internet, you'll find out what happens. But it's not the easy way out. She didn't choose the easy way out. It was a hard choice to make, but it was the hero's choice to make. So I think I kind of answered the question. I might have gone on a tangent. Sometimes I do that.
Tangents.
I lecture for a living.
Oh, that's great.
Emma Bovary is awesome. But that's the sound bite.
Well, no, wait, you kind of
I'm not on the video chat, but I'm like pumping my arm in the air.
And you get that way when you talk about Emma Bovary. Like, I get really excited and passionate when I talk about her, because she sparks that passion. And that's who she is. She's fighting for all of the women before her and after her. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
The why not?
And, you know, some people have asked, like, why now Emma Bovary? Because, you know, Madame Bovary's not taught really that much anymore in schools. And when I was doing research for this essay that I was writing, I really couldn't find much written past like 2010, 2013 on the novel and literary criticism. But what I was finding were all these literary critics saying, this is still an important novel, and we still need to look at this story, and we still need to follow Emma's path, because there's so much to learn from her, just like there's so much to learn from Anna Karenina. It constantly unfolds itself, because they are slices of life, and history, it repeats itself. Like, we can't run away from the fact that we're all just human and we're going to make mistakes, but we can learn from these quote unquote cautionary tales.
Yeah, I'm curious about rehearsals. So in terms of just gathering, what is it, 14, 17? How many actors do y'all
There's 12.
Have? 12, okay. And then in terms of moving the story along, you talked about having to switch faster because it's such a condensed version of the novel. How do you then capture that pace that it's not, it doesn't feel like it's coming out of nowhere?
I can start with that. I think that Bruce did an incredible job in mapping out how he wanted the show to flow and how he wanted each scene to connect to the next scene and how these characters relate to one another. And then we have an incredible design team. Steve Woods, lighting, Russell Parkman with the set, Amanda Capshaw with the costumes, and Justin Locklear with sound design. It's all of those elements coming together that like create the rhythm of the show. And I mean, Steve's lights and Justin's sound all together with Bruce's direction, they really set the feel of the show. And so you know from the beginning, just right from the overture that happens inside of this play, that you're in for a ride. And the sound that Justin chose right in the beginning kind of just makes you think, oh, I better buckle up because something major is about to happen. And Stephanie, I mean, she's carrying the show, constantly floating and moving and meeting people and wrapping us all up into her world.
So it's Stephanie.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think that was one of the concerns that I actually had in the beginning, is that I felt this pressure of perhaps moving everything quickly and making sure that Emma felt like she was suffocated and that she was feeling the pressure so that the end makes sense. And Bruce and I had a beautiful open dialogue, as did Danielle and I. I was always having honest conversations with them and talking to them about Emma. And I went to Bruce at one point and said, I just feel like I should be moving faster, or that Emma's journey should be faster. And he had to really tell me to show patience and trust in the process, in that Emma, it is a process for Emma. And we do want to show those moments where Emma first falls in love, where Emma first is manipulated or taken advantage of, if you will. So I think I had to tell myself that it's okay to, as an actor, to slow down and to breathe in those moments, and then it will all unravel as it should. But I think that pacing, for some reason, was really hard for me. I just wanted everything to move quickly. And I think that I had to slow down a bit as a performer and breathe. And I think that has been helpful and helpful along with the direction from Bruce and Danielle, and just really trusting in that.
That helps me understand how the artistic vision translates from the novel, because part of the novel is ennui, right? It's a fight against boredom. And so that was definitely, when I saw this announced, I'm just like, okay, like how are you guys going to do a play that is about boredom to a certain extent? Yeah. You know, it's a rebellion against that. But I think that is interesting, that while you know, your instinct as an actor, Stephanie, is I'm rebelling against boredom. And this is also what Emma Bovary is doing to a degree. She's trying to destroy the boredom that is a middle-class existence. But it goes beyond. I mean, how much do you guys feel that the artistic vision of the play as it stands right now is a statement of rebellion?
So I think it's 100% a statement, because we all together, like as a cast and a crew, you know, there's a lot to overcome with what Bovary gives you as a text, both as a novel and as a script. And there's so much that's internal inside of the novel and inside of the script that these actors have to show. And it's really hard to reveal that side of yourself. Something that we did spend a lot of time talking about is that this is a play that has to be really natural and very real for it to make sense, for you as an audience to be able to connect to the characters on stage. And sometimes that can be the most difficult thing to do as an actor. And there was a lot of work on getting that to come out, to just reveal the good inside of a person, but also the bad, because one of the I think the best part of being in Madame Bovary is the fact that you get to play almost like a villain every night. You get to show all that deep, manipulative, cunning side that lives inside all of us every night out there. And it's not because you're doing evil, terrible things, but you're doing small, little, daily lies and sleights of hand and manipulative moves that, when all gathered together, build up for a huge collapse. So that's the most exciting part. And that, I think, breaks the boredom that is living inside all of those characters, is because you actually are seeing how their brains are working and all the little steps they take to try to ruin Emma.
And I think that you're right. You know, we have these moments, and a lot of the characters get to speak directly to the audience, and you have a narrator, you have ghosts, if you will. So we're asking the audience to be with us in these moments, in these memories, but then also to trust in these moments that we're breaking out and speaking directly to them. So I agree that that's the challenge that Miss Kennedy gave us, is that we're talking directly to the audience and we're revealing our inner thoughts, like Daniel was speaking of, or we're sharing memories, our memories in the way that they've stayed with us in our hearts. But I think it's been a challenge for us as performers, and perhaps a challenge for the audience to kind of go on that journey and buy into that from the very beginning.
So there is this interesting thing that's kind of happening in theater. And I mean, it's been happening for a while, but I'd love to get you guys' thoughts on this. And see this with Kate Hamill, Pride and Prejudice and Little Women, and that there's these productions going on locally and nationally all over from these kind of recognizable properties. And now we have this production of Madame Bovary. And I'm wondering what you all's thoughts are on either this, is this somehow theater going, well, these are universal truths that are expressed in this art, and so dramatizing it just makes sense for what we do in theater, versus people know this name and they'll come out because they've heard of Louisa May Alcott, or mm-hmm. you know, they've heard of Jane Austen, or they've heard of Flaubert. What do you think is kind of driving these decisions for really audience members as much as artistic directors to kind of touch on these shows? And especially, it also seems like it's a lot of 19th century literature that is doing this. It's either Shakespeare or 19th century literature. And so I'm just wondering, is this having a moment, and is this just people going, okay, this is recognizable, this is a fun thing for us to help unravel? This is a messy ball of string that deals with some big ideas. And I really want that challenge as a director, as an artist, as an actor.
I think it's a story that stands the test of time, truly. I mean, it's going to be all those things. It's a story that people recognize, or it's a story that has impacted humans, but also it's so relevant to now. I know that as an ignorant actor, a young actor, I hated Shakespeare. I hated Shakespeare until I really got to experience it. And then I was like, oh, they are, it is beautiful stories. These are stories of love and hate and passion and fear. So I think it's the same thing with this. If you can get past some of the language, perhaps, or get past the fact that it was written a time that was before our time, it's still a story that's so powerful and relevant. So I think it's all of those things. It was an exciting project for me to take on. And it was a challenge because I knew there was a pressure because so many people know this story. So I knew that there was that pressure, but how can we tell it differently? Or how can we tell it from how can I tell Emma from my perspective? How can I make her unique to my perspective or the vision that we all had as a group? So I think it's all of those things.
And I especially love that it's women that are adapting these stories. I mean, you can't deny that there's this thread of reclaiming our voice, or from mm-hmm. the perspective of the female who's in that journey.
Yeah, and that's why I think that's why we're seeing this resurgence, is that as women, we're waking up, we're opening up, we're we are starting to reclaim our voice, reclaim our place, and to make a claim and stake on our places in this world. And it's important to look back where we came from so that we never have to go back again. And the way that the world is now, it's extremely important to look back at those fundamental moments in history and in literature that changed the course of history. I mean, if you look at when Flaubert was writing Bovary specifically, I'll speak to Bovary, the world was changing. I mean, we were entering the Industrial Revolution, and women were entering the workforce. We were about to enter a war that was going to change everything. And you can see that if we stayed stuck in this middle class bourgeoisie mindset, what would we be? And so I think that there's a lot to just constantly learn, even from a novel written in the late 1800s in France. There's still a lot to learn as Americans or just people of the world about how we can grow as humans and as a society.
And these ideals were so rejected at the time that it was written, and they still are, which is sad. The fact that a woman can be sexual and want to express her sexuality and her passion, that's so rejected. But I think that's what's so important about Emma. She is a sexual, beautiful, passionate human, and all women should jump up for joy and express that if they choose. All humans should.
Yeah. Yeah. And like Flaubert got arrested for writing this book because he was saying things that nobody wanted to hear about a woman. And so I think that there's something also there that keeps this novel particularly so exciting. Because what's so wrong about, as Stephanie's saying, what's so wrong about a woman claiming her sexuality?
Yes.
And living life like a man? What's so wrong about that? Nothing.
Well, I think that is a great point to end on, and we're at our time. Unless you guys want to riff on that some more. No.
Down with the patriarchy.
And the patriarchy is not going to stop you if you guys want to keep talking. I just promised I wouldn't go over 30 minutes. I don't want to take up too much of you guys' time. But if you guys want to riff on the patriarchy, I can even duck out, and you guys, I'll just keep the report on. You guys can riff. I mean, I'm happy to hear it. That's fine too.
But we are complex beings.
Yeah. I'm on board with that.
I do want to thank the incredible humans that have made this possible. So I think that we've got an incredible group of humans, from our director to our choreographer to our designers to our incredible cast and crew. A lot of people made this happen, and it's a beautiful story, and it can only be beautiful because of all these humans that have done all this work. So I celebrate those humans today, and thank y'all for this opportunity to talk about them and this work that we're doing.
No, thank you.
Yes, I second all that Stephanie just said.
Wonderful. No, thank you all for joining us. Madame Bovary plays at Undermain till March 15th. So go out and see it, dear listener. And thank you all, Steph, Danielle. Thank you all for joining us.
Break all the legs.
Thanks. Break all the legs. Up is Down, Left is Right is sponsored by the Shakespeare Everywhere Network. Shakespeare Everywhere supports artists all over the world in setting up their own theater company and provides marketing and ticket sales support, as well as helping bars, restaurants, and event spaces and booking shows at their location. Learn more at shakespeareeverywhere.net.